It's the Popmatic Podcast for August 3rd, 2016. The jelly-filled center of a shame spiral. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am an evil robot who killed and ate Jeremy to refuel my cells. He wrote this script, but joining me today are...
Amanda.
Bill.
Twinkie the Kid.
Summer challenge is almost over!
Aw, man.
You don't have my 60 hours yet.
Yeah, I'm at 59.9.
If you listen to an old episode of the Popmatic Podcast, that'll push you over the edge.
Whoa. Good to know.
I'll be right back.
I'll go lasso me an episode.
You have until August 13th to do this. Read 10 hours and get a prize. Get entered into a contest to win a bigger prize. This is the final week of Summer Challenge, and previously we're exploring different aspects of wellness. So far, we've covered physical, mental, and spiritual matters. Where does that leave us? Cheat week!
Oh.
Read, watch, listen, eat, whatever you want.
I want candy!
We're here to help fill your ears and eyeballs with junk. As an evil robot, and an aside, this obviously was written by someone with body issues. It doesn't matter. It's all good. We love you. Cheat week.
Engage.
While the evil robot resets again, I think I'll just go on ahead in the cold open. Brr, cold.
Oh, I miss cold.
Long-time listeners know, my girlfriend and my dad, know that, I guess the only listeners, know that I've been, I am Gary from Perth, long-time listeners know that I've been commandeering the podcast every week to record my ongoing biography, Eat, Pray, Catalog, and this week it's going to be, dare I say, the flimsiest of entries. When I was a kid, for the last bite of a sandwich, I would eat it one ingredient at a time. If a sandwich is a party, then eating an ingredient at a time is like saying goodbye to the guests individually on their way out. Except for tomatoes, which are moldering in a dumpster behind the sandwich shop, destined to rot and be devoured by vermin, as it deserves. This week, in the spirit of Young Mike, I thought I would talk about two books that focus on the ingredients slash parts of two beloved modern conveniences slash snack foods. Author Steve Ellinger was eating an ice cream sandwich one day with his daughter, and when she asked, "Daddy, what is polysorbate 60? While looking at an ingredients list. It sounds delicious. He was at a loss. What is it about processed foods anyway? Has everybody, everybody has looked at the ingredients list, but what does red 40 really mean? After looking at various snack foods, he settled on the beloved Twinkie. Well, I'm not sure. And so after a lot of research and flying around the world, he wrote, Twinkie Deconstructed, my journey to discover how the ingredients found in processed foods are grown, mined, parentheses, yes, mined, and parentheses, and manipulated into what America eats. It's some shocking stuff. I have to admit I bought the book when I learned that he goes to like a gypsum mine in Oklahoma. That's some sweet gypsum.
That's where Twinkies come from?
That's an ingredient in Twinkies.
Wow. Better go get some. That sounds delightful.
Yeah, well, it's so crunchy. unsurprisingly, most of the ingredients are there to prolong shelf life. Contrary to popular myth, Twinkies last an incredibly short time from leaving the factory to the grocery store shelf.
Oh, spoiler alert. Yeah,
a matter of weeks, literally. Amanda got
I
a
didn't
pun
even
in there.
Just
see?
That good.
I'm here like a minute and already really like it. Back to the puns. All right. Welcome back, me. they last a matter of weeks at most before they expire. If reading isn't your bag, like Evil Robot, we've got another book with a very similar concept. Art student Thomas Thwaites was making toast one day when he was like, how hard could it be to invent a device to cook toast? Why do we like toast? Did people toast bread before there was toasters? hey, you know, I wonder if I could make a toaster as an art project. Yeah. You know, something tells me that he was smoking something non-toast related. This stream of consciousness was going on. Yeah. The resulting book, which is mostly photographs and you could read, quote unquote, in less than an hour, and that was like 191 pages, is called The Toaster Project, or A Heroic Attempt to Build a Simple Electronic Appliance from Scratch. Thwaites buys the cheapest toaster he can. He lives in Great Britain. It's like £5 or something for a toaster. I was like, wow, that's like surprisingly cheap. He disassembles it, and he actually photographs like almost every like part spring and like, you know, nut and bolt in there and stuff. And tries to actually assemble it from scratch. And he even goes and mining, ingredients from like, you know, around Britain. You know, he goes to like, you know, hey, can I have some rocks from your mine? They're like, I guess. That kind of thing. And like, he makes a kiln and like, you know, fires them up. Spoiler alert. The resulting toaster looks like a melted cake and is too incredibly dangerous to toast any food.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, it works, technically.
Just don't use it around small children.
It looks very scary. So there you have it. I'll disassemble this. Yeah, I had an intro, a Twinkie, and some toast. Mm-hmm. What do you have, Amanda?
Okay, so I would say that for the most part, we've tried to be healthy this summer. But, you know, sometimes you've just been good long enough and you need to cheat a little bit. And so, like Mike, what better way to cheat than with food?
Woohoo!
So, on top of that, I think that we've all wondered at some point what it would be like if Quentin Tarantino had become a chef instead of a filmmaker. Now, I know I've considered this on several occasions. So, finally,
Reservoir Hot Dogs.
Yum. Pass the ketchup. So finally, we have our answer. Thanks to Anthony Bourdain, renowned chef, author of Kitchen Confidential, we now have a pretty good idea of what happens when things get rowdy in the kitchen. So in 2012, Bourdain released his first graphic novel, which was entitled Get Giro. Now, in the not-too-distant future, master chefs rule L.A. and the world, so there are two diverse camps. The internationalists love great food at all costs, so rare endangered fish, no problem, let's fry it up. Unsustainable produce, let's say yum. So as long as it's culinarily amazing, everything is fair game. Now, on the other side sits the farm, who are militaristic vegans who define the locavore, farm-to-table, meat-is-death-scene to suit their culinary pleasures. Don't mess with them. So in the middle sits Giro. He's a simple sushi chef, that's hard to say, who only buys the best sustainable ingredients and then treats them with love to make the best sushi. The first book is about the two factions fighting over Giro and his talents, and then what he does to mitigate the situation. There is a second book called Get Giro, Blood and Sushi. That was released in late 2015, and in it, Bourdain gives us Giro's genesis story. We learn how Giro made the transition from the rough streets of Tokyo as an heir to the Yakuza Empire to the backwoods of L.A. as a meager but masterful sushi chef. I can't say that. Sushi chef. It's hard to say, man. So we meet Giro's father, his brother, his lady love, as well as the original master who taught him how to prepare fish properly. Now, so far, none of this seems overly Tarantino-esque, right? So on the first page, on the seventh page of the first book, one of his customers comes in and asks for a California roll after dousing his sushi in wasabi and soy sauce. Unfortunately, this angers Giro, and a swift flick of his very sharp knife removes the guy's head from his body.
Whoa.
Yes, this is just the beginning.
Hardcore.
That's so cool.
I know, it was just like, boom, I'm like, wait, what? Why is his head on the floor? I didn't get it. These books are really violent throughout. Okay, I get it. Chefs have knives. Knives cut stuff. But at least it works in the story, and it isn't just random gratuitous violence, which I don't like. But so Bourdain was assisted by Joel Rose in writing the story, but my favorite part is Langdon Foss's art. Don't just buzz over the pics to read the story, because half of it is hidden in the artwork. The names of the restaurants poke fun at the highbrow places in the real world, but my favorite was the name of the street in the poor sections, the poor, like, where they only eat fast food. The streets have names like McWendking. So it's snarky and funny, and if you don't look for it, you will miss it. So these books are edgy like Bourdain, snarky like Bourdain, but still enjoyable. The library has both of these graphic novels in addition to Kitchen Confidential and Bourdain's other books, including his fiction novels.
See, I have two things. One, I kept thinking you were saying, like, get, like, gyro, like the gyro sandwich.
Oh, no, it's not Greek. It's Japanese.
I was getting all excited, like feta cucumber sauce.
No, gyro.
Isn't gyro, wasn't that a Gyro Dreams of Sushi? Wasn't that a movie?
Wait till Tickle My Fancy. There'll be more.
Well, then I will boop along. What do you got, Bill?
I've got junk for the mind.
Nice.
And so, just to give a little history on... May 20th, 2015 was David Letterman's last appearance on the television show Late Night with David Letterman. I miss Dave, and the one thing I really miss is his top 10 list. The origin behind the top 10 list is the brainchild of head writer Steve O'Donnell. The concept of top 10 list came about by a ridiculous eligible bachelor list in the local New York newspaper that included 84-year-old Bill Paley. Bill Paley, for those not in the know, was the chief executive who built CBS. The very first top 10 list happened on September 18th, 1985, and it was the top 10 things that almost rhyme with peas.
Please.
The entries were read by Letterman in reverse countdown order. It was preceded before the countdown by a drum roll by Anton Figg. The top 10 list came from home offices such as Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Scottsdale, Arizona, and Wahoo, Nebraska. By the way, Wahoo, Nebraska lobbied for months for the honor, and they got it.
Wahoo!
Yeah. Now, Ian Letterman liked how it sounded. He thought, that'll be cool. Now, if you missed the top 10 list, well, lucky you, the public library has two books of the top 10 list in our collection. First, Letterman's book of top 10 list and zesty low-cal chicken recipes. So there's some food in this,
nice.
Too. Also in the also in the book is a special bonus plans for an end table by master carpenter Norm Abram. Second, Letterman's new book of top 10 list and wedding dress patterns for the husky bride.
Wow.
Now, these are both great bathroom books. I won't go any further.
I'm sure they have a clip or something.
I'm going to give you an example of the reading enjoyment that you can have with these books. So, one top 10 list.
Oh, boy. But if you go.
No. Since the Star Trek movie just recently opened, top 10 signs you're at a bad Star Trek convention. Number 10, it's being held at a rest area off the interstate. Number 9, when you count the fake Spock ears in the room, you come up with an odd number. Number 8, Ben and Jerry's unveils a weird-tasting new flavor called Roddenberry. 7, dorks with mo haircuts will keep wandering in from the Three Stooges convention down the hall. Number 6, so-called Starship Enterprise looks a lot like an RV wrapped in a tinfoil. Number 5, lack of restrooms forces you to go where no man has gone before. Number 4, instead of Vulcan sign for live long and prosper, everybody's giving you the finger. Number 3, keynote speaker is William Shatner's hairpiece. Number 2, someone yells, "Beam me up, Skippy." And the number one reason sign that you're in a bad Star Trek convention is the hookers all look like Klingons. So, Brian, tell us about your junk.
Oh, I think Brian's been assimilated by the Borg, and this is bad,
the evil
robot Cutis.
I told you there would be laughs.
Yeah, see?
Also, comedy. I like about the potty humor today came from Bill.
Yeah, I know. That's great.
It's true.
Evil Robot has been to all of those Star Trek conventions. and will probably go to more. Jeremy is not here because I ate him, but if he was here, he would probably talk about comic books. But in his stead, I will talk about something related to comic books, or maybe just even comic books. This is Cheat Week, so I'm again going to talk about what is tickling my fancy this week in the main segment of the show. It's like Evil Robot is a hypocrite. It doesn't even have any rules. All right, okay. What tickled Evil Robot's fancy the most this week? Undeniably, and it makes him feel so guilty, Who knew that robots had such emotions? I am like Jeremy, going on and not mentioning what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we should have unplugged the Jeremy circuit before he went online.
What am I talking about? I'm talking about the Wonder Woman trailer. I made my head explode. Okay. I was kind of excited about the Wonder Woman movie. Now, why? Why am I excited about the
because
Wonder Woman?
Because it's set during World War One and evil
well,
robot.
Don't spoil any. Don't spoil.
Oh no.
Okay. I don't think that I really cared about Wonder Woman all that much, but I read that Jill Lepore book that came out a couple years ago called The Secret History of Wonder Woman, and it was really fascinating and interesting. Now, comic nerds, I'm going to be like Jeremy today, and I'm gonna give you a one-up.
Oh.
A lot of comics nerds complained about that book was called The Secret History of Wonder Woman, but help me out here, the guy's name, the creator of Wonder Woman.
Is that Morton or...
William Marston. William Marston, all the stuff about the weirdness about his life. Comic book nerds knew all that stuff.
You're using the lasso of truth now.
Yeah, and she called her book The Secret History. And even the stuff about how women were cut out of the picture at DC because they were a bunch of D-bags, like, comic book nerds knew that. But then she presented it to a larger audience, right, and said it was a big secret, and actually it wasn't. Though her book was excellent. Like, if you don't know anything about the history, it's awesome, go to it. But after that, I was kind of fascinated, right, and I got interested in, like, you know, Wonder Woman again, and not again, I was never interested in Wonder Woman before, but I started taking a look at the comics, and I heard there was a Wonder Woman thing coming out. Now, I'm also going to be like Jeremy. I'm going to overshare and let you guys know things that you don't want to know. One, I only like brunettes, so okay, Wonder Woman, gentlemen prefer blondes. Evil Robot is evil, okay? He only likes brunettes. So if I'm going to pick a sexy superhero, it's going to be Wonder Woman, okay?
You never
she
watched,
was an Amazon, though,
you
right?
never
Amazon
watched the Linda Carter Wonder Woman as a child?
Dude.
Evil Robot? I know you didn't like superhero stuff, but come on.
I don't. What?
Come on. Linda Carter.
never watched it, okay?
Yeah.
But then I also heard that Robin Wright was going to be the new Wonder Woman. I was like, cool, it's going to be directed by a woman, and maybe it wouldn't be as dumb, you know? Anyway, the trailer comes out. It looks really cool. Chris Pine is in it. I hate Chris Pine. But then there's the other scene. I'm like, there's this one shot. I see these Turkish hats. And I'm like, oh, man, it's set in World War One. And then I totally freaked out. I was like, oh, the Wonder Woman movie is set in World War One. And the trailer looked really cool. Which is promising because sometimes you see a trailer for a movie and it's like, this looks terrible. Example, Star Trek. Everyone's kind of liking the new Star Trek movie.
That's pretty good.
But when the first trailer came out, everyone was like, oh, more, why? And then even, like, Ghostbusters. Like, everyone was hyped for the new Ghostbusters, all right? And then the trailer came out, and they're like, duh, right? Okay. So, the Wonder Woman trailer made my brain explode. I'm just so excited. I was, like, all excited about it. And I was just like, yes, Wonder Woman. And then I look up release date, June 2017.
Yep.
And then right? Okay.
All
right.
Oh. That's why I haven't seen the trailer yet, because I don't think it's like something a year from now. Yeah.
All evil robot circuits just depowered. But then I was like, I want some more Wonder Woman. Where can I get it? Well, guess what? A few years ago, much like the cinematic universe, DC rebooted all their comic books. Mike, what was it called?
The New 52?
The New 52. So there's the new Wonder Woman series that started. It was written by Brian Azzarello. Who else did he write, Mike?
Batman, 100 Bullets.
Cool, I don't know. I'm
like on the spot,
Wow, I'm the designated Jeremy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I could be making up stuff. You know, he wrote Sandman.
I don't know what he wrote before, but he's writing the New 52 version of Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So I read it, and the art is by Cliff Chiang, who's amazing. It's very kind of like sketchy and flat, and you know, kind of 2D, and I like that. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's anything that you haven't heard before about Wonder Woman, but if you need your Wonder Woman itch scratched, it looks really cool. I've read the first three volumes. The first one's called Blood, the second one is called Guts, and the third one is called Iron. Get it?
Oh, I'd be
hungry. Yeah, get it? Blood, Guts, Iron, get it? It keeps going after that, and it's basically, you know, gods are alive, and Wonder Woman is one of them, you know? Yippee-skippee.
Yeah, Amazons. I never understood why, like, She's an Amazon, yet she has a lariat of truth and an invisible jet.
That was just a fun party favor.
Well, I don't know.
I think they cut out the invisible jet from the modern comics. But when I was a kid,
it made the Lego movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It is all... Okay, so just as a contrast.
Sure.
I also read the new Grant Morrison Earth One Wonder Woman, which was terrible, which many people brought up as terrible. And as with many people brought up, it was like absolutely no reason to write that comic. Why was that? I just don't know why that was made, right?
Yeah, Earth One seemed like a waste of time.
Yeah, so...
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Grant Morrison's Earth One Wonder Woman was a waste of time. Absolutely. It was just like, and it was kind of like all the creepy elements of the Marston version was there, and like none of the empowering. It was just not good. But the Wonder Woman that in New 52 is like kind of like in this awesome sweet spot where it's interesting for kids and teens and adults. It is junk, and why can you tell it's junk? Because I've read three of the volumes, and I have no idea what the plots were. I don't know. It's all the gods are back, and Wonder Woman has like this sidekick who's kind of like Xena and what was
Gabby?
It? Like, yeah, Xena and Gabrielle. And, you know, and they gotta, and Gabrielle's a human, you know, and Wonder Woman's a, whatever. Okay, I've seen this show and read this comic book 100 times. It tastes great, just like a Twinkie. After I eat one, I want another one. And you know what? I want another one after that. Wonder Woman, Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chiang. Love the art. Story, I don't, you guys know I don't read, anyway. Hey, guys.
Hey, evil robot.
Hey, evil robot.
What do silly humans do when they tickle their fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Mac? Oh.
Well, I did lots of things on vacation that cannot be replicated here in Nashville. Why, I toured an actual World War II U-boat in... Chicago. I ate an Al's Italian beef sandwich, aka the greatest sandwich ever created in the history of mankind. Oh my god. And of course, I defeated Lord the Tiger's chosen gladiators, the Fat Chef and the Thin Chef from Cinnamon Toast Crunch, at the Combat Lake Coliseum in Battle Creek, Michigan. I held their heads aloft and met his fealty.
Oh. Crunched on their cereal.
That's right. Well, you know, there used to be three chefs, and two of them disappeared. Because they became his chosen gladiators in the arena. They killed the cookie crook. They feasted on his blood. One thing that I could recommend that we actually have in the collection is a book called Strangers on a Train by Patricia Highsmith. Longtime listeners may remember way back in the March 2nd episode of this very year where I gushed about Carol and the American Friend, both based on Highsmith works. Well, as is my wont, I went on a Highsmith buying spree, and of course I didn't actually read one until I was on the road. Anywho... Strangers on a Train is about two dudes, Bruno and Guy, who after a few drinks on a train decide to commit a murder for one another. Blah. Since they're both strangers, it's the perfect alibi. Yeah. Bruno is a boozy sociopath, rich mama's boy. But Guy is an architect who's trying to get a divorce from his annoying ex-wife. He's just an average Joe. Who becomes consumed with guilt. The book reminds me a lot of Cornell Woolrich's Fright, which you can read in the Hard Case Crime Library. A lot about like how, you know, people, you know, average person commits murder and they become consumed with guilt, all that kind of thing. Highsmith really knows how to turn a phrase, and if I were more of a professional, I'd have a sample of it here, but I don't. Strangers on a Train, check it out. We have the Hitchcock movie as well, which I have not seen.
What do you have, Amanda?
So, Mike mentioned earlier that I'm going to talk about this movie, and it's kind of nice when, you know, things all come together in one big happy picture. Okay, sometimes it's creepy because it feels like certain books are haunting you, but you get the idea. So, in my earlier segment, I mentioned Bourdain's Get Jiro graphic novels, but it turns out that Jiro is a real guy in Japan who really did dedicate his life to finding and making the best sushi ever. Now, I learned this actually when I was reading Questlove's amazing new book called Something to Food About, which I wrote about for our off-the-shelf blog last month. And if he's nice, Evil Robot may link to that in our show notes. But during one of his interviews, Questlove mentioned that he had seen a documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi. And the bells went off in my head. I wondered if it was the same Jiro. I mean, that's not really that common of a name, right? It has to be the same guy. So the library has the movie, and when I got it, the guy on the cover looks exactly like the old master in Bourdain's graphic novels. Plus, Bourdain has a quote on the cover of the DV case, so it's clear that he was very aware and was paying homage to the original Master Jiro in his marvelous sushi. So in 2011, director David Gelb featured Jiro Ono, then an 85-year-old sushi master who owned Sukiyabashi Jiro. So this is a small 10-seat restaurant in a Tokyo subway that only serves sushi. No appetizers or dinners. And yet, somehow, it was the first sushi restaurant that was awarded 3 Michelin stars, which is like the pinnacle of the food world. Just if you're thinking of picking up some sushi on your way home from work, you can forget about it. The restaurant, you have to get your reservation at least a month in advance, and it will cost you the nominal fee of 30,000 yen, or about $240.
Blah.
For sushi.
Man,
so
they'd have to do things for me.
Yeah. It looks good, but I'm not sure it's worth $240. Nope. So anyway, you can visit his website, and he actually has rules for how you actually eat the sushi. Like you don't put stuff on it. Like, he presents it in front of you, and you eat it. That's how it goes. Mm. So one of the food bloggers in Tokyo mentioned during the movie that he was always really nervous to eat at Jiro's, and I can totally get that, because, like, you're just at this little 10-seat, and he's, like, right across the counter from you watching you eat sushi, and you're like, okay. It's really good. Don't hurt me.
He read the comic book first.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
He did. No wasabi. I don't want a California roll. So the movie is really interesting. Much was made of the fact that Jiro refuses to retire and leave the business to his oldest son. He actually has 2 sons. His oldest son has been working by his side for 30 years. His younger son has actually kind of been kicked out of the nest. Since he is the younger of 2 sons, he had to start his own restaurant, which also does sushi in the same fashion. He doesn't have the 3 Michelin stars, and he charges a little bit less, but it's kind of the same idea. So I wondered if, you know, since this was 2011, if Jiro's still in business, and it looks like, from what I can tell, at the age of 90, he's still making sushi, his restaurant is still booked, he's still very popular. So I personally have never been the biggest fan of sushi. My husband's kind of convinced me for parts of it, but I can totally respect dedicating years of your life to perfecting your craft, whatever it is. Now, my husband actually sat down and watched part of this movie with me, and he wanted to jump on a plane to Tokyo and go as soon as he saw it.
Wow.
So he was in. He's like, let's go. I want to go. But I thought, after reading Bourdain's graphic novels and seeing, you know, Jiro in the novel, that it was fun to get to see the real Jiro do his thing. And the library, again, has the DVD if you would like to see the magic for yourselves. So, happy Jiro Day, everybody! Bill?
Okay. Tickling My Fancy is a graphic novel called The Killing Joke, written by Alan Moore and illustrated by Brian Boland. This graphic novel is an origin story of the Joker. It portrays the Joker as a failed comic family man who gets involved with the wrong crowd. The Killing Joke was extremely successful and was released, and you can check out the graphic novel from the library. Warning, The Killing Joke is not for kiddies. It is a twisted story. That brings me to why I wanted to talk about The Killing Joke. They've just recently done an R-rated adaptation of the story. It's soon to be released on DVD and Blu-ray. And they had a special screening of it out at Opry Mills. I personally enjoyed it. There's been a lot of controversy online. People, oh, we hate it. It sucks. No, it doesn't. If you know the graphic novel, you can literally read it in 30 minutes. It's just like 40 pages long.
I read it in a commute while my friend was driving.
Yeah. And but what they did was they tacked on a Batgirl story. So there's this really cool Batgirl story that goes along with the movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and maybe the library won't. But anyway, we do have the graphic novel, The Killing Joke, and it's really funny. I was going to get it and put it on hold, but it's all checked out.
Mm.
And the one copy we had was on hold for somebody. So it's right now it's popular because everybody who went to see it at Opry Mills, and it was sold out, the theater, is getting that book and reading it again. So that's what's tickling my fancy. Brian?
Da-da-da. Okay, so the Evil Robot was all excited about the Wonder Woman trailer. Now, the Wonder Woman trailer was released where?
iTunes? I don't know.
Bill knows the answer. Comic-Con, right?
That's cooler than we are. Like, I've never been to Comic-Con.
You know, I don't go to San Diego.
Bill
it
does.
It is great.
Bill does.
Well, I mean, I would if
until
I had, you know.
I can't
until
get
they get tickets anymore.
The Wonder Woman trailer was released at Comic-Con, but there's another convention coming up soon that is even bigger and better for some nerds. And that is Gen Con, the four best days in gaming. Yeah, at Indianapolis, Indiana. That is August 4th through August 7th. This is the biggest gaming convention in the United States. This is role-playing games and board games. I am so excited. How big is Gen Con? Well, it's at the Indianapolis Convention Center downtown, and it's completely full, and it's so big, so they're moving the other half of the con to Lucas Oil Stadium. So if the convention center near the professional NFL stadium is so full and overpacked that they're just gonna like move half the con into the stadium. So how are you gonna get to the stadium? They're gonna have an underground tunnel lined with arcade games.
Suddenly I'm interested. Well, board game convention, whatever, bros.
Arcade
game tunnel, yeah. Mike's still in the tunnel.
Arcade game tunnel, yes. So also, and Gen Con has started to have the same issue they had with Comic Con. Like, no one who wants to go can go or get a hotel that is within the distance of the thing. So, the big thing that kind of happens at Gen Con, if you're not into going there and playing games, you know, is like seeing what games come out, what new games are coming out. So Evil Robot had to pick a game that was coming out that he cared about. It would be Star Trek Ascendancy. So this is a big modular 4X game. Does anyone know what 4X stands for?
Space games, where you fly around and kill everything you see, are usually referred to as 4X games. The 4X's being explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate. Speaking as an evil robot, I think these are great values to teach your human children.
That's where you go out and explore and kill stuff. It's this big modular Star Trek game set in the actual real Star Trek universe, not the Abrams universe. And it's put out by a company called Gale Force 9. Now, Gale Force 9 is interesting because they have sort of done this thing that in the past was kind of impossible, though it's changing. Taking other people's intellectual properties and actually making really good, complicated, meaningful games out of it. So they've done it with Homefront, and they've also done it with Sons of Anarchy, which is an interesting topic too, because usually board games don't get as R-rated as Sons of Anarchy. But like everyone was really like really fascinated that they actually made a Sons of Anarchy game that was like really good and meaningful and was a complicated game and not just a, you know, party favor. So they got the Star Trek license, which seems to be back on the market before the new TV series comes out, and of course the new movie, and of course this year is what?
Star Trek 50, Death of Fake Nerds!
And,
you know...
Come on,
I... Well, you know, you don't even like the original series, so what am I supposed to think of? That's right, you know.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention Star Trek Ascendancy is set in the Next Generation time period. So, I digress.
Say engage number one.
he's supposed to be French, but he has an English accent. You morons!
I was like 7 when that show came out. I'm like, so how does that work? Like, why is he French but has an incredibly English accent? Shut up, Mike. It's a show.
It, okay.
But he grew up in France. He mentions it all the time. Mais oui, je ne sais pas.
Have you seen that?
That, you know, it's the 25th century or whatever. How come they haven't cured male pattern baldness?
It's a thing.
No more body shame in the 26th century, man. You can eat a Twinkie, it doesn't have fat in it, and it's okay if you're bald. What are we going to say, Bill?
Have you seen that documentary on Netflix about William Shatner did about the captains?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I don't mean to bring you down. Shatner's Captain movie is terrible.
Oh, jeez.
Now, Shatner's other movie that he did about the first 3 seasons of Next Generation is pretty good.
The William Shatner-directed documentary chronicling the tumultuous first 3 seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation is called Chaos on the Bridge.
Roll eyes.
That movie is
I thought it was fun.
That is the worst movie.
It was nice.
If anything,
it was a fluff piece. What'd you expect? Well, yeah. It's from Shatner. If nothing, it's not like he's gonna do hard hitting like Avery Cates. I don't believe you.
If there's no other reason that movie's terrible.
Avery Cates was a different character.
Chris Pine is in it. And I hate Chris Pine. And besides this,
who doesn't hate Chris Pine?
And
I like Chris Pine.
He's in the new Wonder Woman. Though I think if they have them hook up, it's gonna ruin that movie for me.
Yeah.
So I would have to agree with that.
I think they are.
And the other captains, with the exception of maybe Scott Bakula, which is saying something, like, are openly hostile to Shatner. So that's why that movie was bad. So, like, I think Avery Brooks is just trolling him, and he doesn't know. And they're like, but that should be more interesting than it is. And I think Kate Mulgrew hates him, too. That's the worst movie.
I'm going to have to look at it again. Huh?
Yeah. I remember Avery Brooks being really weird. but I don't think, maybe he's just weird. You never know. These Hollywood types.
He was the head writer for like the first two seasons. He was from The Equalizer. And he just did crime shows. Now, he was a jerk. You remember him?
Yeah, it sounds like it rings a bell, yeah.
And he would like when Denise Crosby, well, she left because she wasn't doing anything. So, yeah, she went to be a movie star, and he rolls his eyes like that. I mean, just, I know that guy.
Oh, man.
That's why he got canned after 2 years. And then Ronald Moore came in, and it just...
Wait. Actually, interesting material. It's in the other movie that I'm talking about that'll splice in the title for. About why the first three seasons of Next Generation were terrible and how it changed after that. An amazing movie directed by William Shatner. The only thing that Shatner has done that I actually like. All right, I'm just kidding. Okay, so that was it.
The show.
Okay, back on track.
You never saw Visiting Hours.
You never saw the Canadian slasher film,
and I'm being facetious.
That's really bad. You haven't seen that movie that he did in Esperanto?
Yeah.
Incubus.
He was in Miss Congeniality.
He was in The Devil's Reign. That was awesome. The Devil's Reign is great.
He melted in there.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He was in Star Trek The Motion Picture, which is pretty good if you like 3-hour disastrous shock fest. Okay.
Of course, that's your favorite one, the one that's super boring and no one likes.
Exactly. That's kind of, but you know what? That's actually kind of a prerequisite for me liking something. So if the new Wonder Woman movie just like everyone thinks it just sucks and it's like really long and nothing happens and like, what is this pretentious garbage? I'm going to be like, yeah, Wonder Woman.
You need to watch Ang Lee's Hulk. You'll love it.
You know what? I hate that. Yeah. It's
what?
Terrible
wow.
movie. Terrible movie.
I thought it was garbage and I hated it.
Terrible movie. Yeah. Terrible movie. Back on track.
We're still recording?
Wait, there's more.
Yeah, there's more.
what you hear in the background is Amanda scoffing because somehow Jeremy wasn't here and we talked about comic book crap for the whole freaking episode.
Hey, I talked about bread mostly.
I held up my end. I talked about a comic book.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah? Well, graphic novel.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Quite, yes.
Well, I know who Brian Azzarello is. I guess I joined him.
Back on track, Gen Con is August 4th through August 7th, the biggest, best gaming convention in America, and Evil Robot is excited about Star Trek Ascendancy, the new big box modular Star Trek game. Why not just take all your money and burn it? Does anyone have any corrections?
I not.
No.
I do not.
Oh, we're no fun.
I am an evil robot, so I have many corrections, additions, addendums, etc. The clip at the beginning was Bill Hicks. Most of his discography is on Hoopla. His bit about matter being just energy condensed is on many of his records. The clip at the end was from Harvey, which was on Bill's featured segment. The suicide clip was from the song Harlem the live version found on their self-titled album, also available on Hoopla. The Alan Vega, Alex Chilton, and Ben Vaughn record I mentioned is called Cubist Blues, and the song is titled Come On Lord. This is probably the only proper correction. Bill said that Michael Herr's Dispatches was a novel. It is, in fact, a work of nonfiction. I am a robot. Your evil glare cannot affect me. Amanda mentioned in passing that Sarah Bareilles wrote the musical Waitress. Evil Robot thinks it's probably worth pointing out that that was nominated for Best Musical Tony, which is pretty cool. But, of course, she was going up against the Hamilton musical.
Yeah,
so
the juggernaut that is Hamilton.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Sometimes that's true. it's also based on a movie that we have, too. Like, the library has a movie called The Waitress that is, then the musical was based on that movie.
I dig it. Evil Robot used the lines, quote, high up there with the hiss, that's where all the magic is, unquote. These are actually lyrics from a Coil song, Copacabana. Evil Robot obviously has a lot to learn about plagiarism and copyright. Those were the only corrections from the mechanical portion of the podcast. Though Jeremy is not here today, he wanted me to tell you that he thought Snoop Dogg was the Herald of the Bud.
For shizzle.
For more information about Snoop Dogg, Bud, or maybe Bud Light, if that's more your thing, we are in Nashville after all, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or RSS.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
Next week! Her name is Rio, and she's filled with putrid sludge. She's also hosting the Olympics.
We're nuts about Brazil. We'll wax poetic about Brazil.
What's that? Oh, you're using all the best ones. What's the robot sound for a groan?
Error.
Okay, on the Wonder Woman television show that starred Linda Carter.
Yeah.
What actress played Wonder Woman's kid sister?
Oh, no. I'm at a loss. All I know is Linda Carter.
I have no idea.
Deborah Winger.
What? Oh. An officer in a Wonder Woman.
Bringing up the Letterman. They brought that up on Letterman. She was on the show once, and she just said, I'm sick of this Letterman. I'm leaving. And she rips off, and there she had a Wonder Woman set out and runs out the awesome. Audience waving bye to everybody.
Cool.
That has to be on tape somewhere.
Here we have now some film early in your career. Yeah, how many years?
How early?
Well, I believe this is in the mid-70s, right? Early 70s? No, mid-70s. 76?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know what it is?
Okay, 76.
Here we go. Here, Deborah Winger, early on in her big shot.
Bicentennial acting.
Career. Roll it, Hal. Deborah Winger.
Wonder Woman.
That's all. Now they're making all those movies, and yeah. I'm too old.
Yeah, a great combination, violence and cute outfits.
Cute outfits. And violence and breasts.
What were you there?
I was Wonder Girl.
You were Wonder Girl.
I was an Amazonian.
And Linda Carter
was... I flew from the Bermuda Island that we lived on in an invisible airplane to save the world from Nazis.
Well, congratulations. But now you and Linda Carter was Wonder Woman, you were Wonder Girl.
Yes, and that was the way that was from the beginning to the end.
And so when she was out of town, you would take over? How did that work?
You know, the BCCI scandal wasn't going on, so she was never out of town.
Oh, I see.
And, it's not bad. It was just a reference to a news event. We've all moved on from that. I have nothing to do with that anymore. I hardly ever hear about this. I hope
you're not embarrassed by that.
I'm terribly embarrassed. I'm hurt, and I will get payback.
Is everything all right?
Can we talk privately
just
for a minute?
All right, we'll talk a little later. Oh. You know, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
I'm gone already. I'm gone. No, that's great, Dave, because it's really late, and I really got to go because...
You know, this might be fun around the house this weekend.